Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. And tonight's going to be a good one. We have got two guests lined up for you this evening. And right before we get to it, I want to make a few announcements. I want to remind everybody of the March Against Monsanto global protest that's taking place in many cities around the world. That'll be May 20th. You can get the March Against Monsanto.org website and get all the information you need there. Find places where protests are taking place. You can sign up, join in an ongoing, or start your own, whatever you want to do. The second one, May 20th also, is the Operation Stand Together on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. This is our veterans standing up and saying things need to change. We've got all these veterans affected by burn pits, by Agent Orange, chemical warfare of all kinds that has been tested on them, things that were done to them that they knew nothing about, and nobody wants them to know even now that the cause of their illness and ailments is what was done to them surreptitiously in the military. They've been used as guinea pigs. So that protest will be taking place on the mall May 20th. Okay. And by the way, as I understand it, Aaron Brockovich will be a key speaker there. And Vincent Deem is the organizer. If you go to operationstandtogether.org, you can get all the information on the gathering from Vincent and any other information you might need. Now, today, in reference to everything we're going to be talking about, I saw a couple articles come out on Government Executive and a few other places regarding pending legislation that would ease the way for firing incompetent VA employees. And basically, this legislation is going to deal with upper-level management. One of the things we've discussed at length on this show is the idea that these hospitals are so mismanaged, money is squandered in amounts you cannot even imagine. We've got wait lists where veterans are left to die before even seeing anyone, and yet somebody got a big stinking bonus for signing back up. And if you put too much pressure on them, they simply take that hospital administrator and move them over to another hospital to mismanage and bring another one in. And it's just a revolving door of these same people. And I'm still choking on the fact that out in Arizona, with their 400-person wait list, of which 221 died waiting to see a doctor that because they couldn't afford it, $600,000 was spent on a rock for the Center for Blind Veterans. I bet they appreciated that. Well, anyway, our guest tonight is Mike Slack, our first guest, and he's going to be talking about the protest taking place tomorrow at the Poplar Bluff, Missouri VA Center. And this is another one of those ugly stories about a whistleblower being targeted again. And we need those whistleblowers. It's the only way we know what actually is going on in these agencies and organizations. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Give everybody a little background on what's taking place here and why.
Well, this is a true grassroots effort. People keep asking me what group is doing this. And there really is no group. There were just quite a few veterans who were aware of the situation in Poplar Bluff, and several of them said, well, let's go there, let's do a demonstration or a rally or something, and it just kind of grew naturally. I was asked to help out by a couple of guys who kind of got the ball rolling, and then we ran into a couple others who were starting to do the same thing, and it just merged. The group will meet at noon tomorrow in the private shopping center parking lot across the street from the John J. Pershing Hospital. And right next to the Shaved Ice place, if you're there and looking for it. And we will be peacefully demonstrating where we can be seen by the VA and by cars driving by in support of whistleblowers and in support of the executive order President Trump signed a couple of weeks ago and the legislation you just mentioned. And in particular, we'll be supporting whistleblower Dr. Dale Klein, a pain management specialist physician at John J. Pershing. For the last year and a half, Dr. Klein, because he was a whistleblower, has not been allowed to see patients and has not had staff. He has had to sat basically in solitary confinement in his office, twiddling his thumbs, doing nothing useful, but is still drawing full salary, which he thinks is atrocious, and I would have to agree. He could be helping a lot
too.
Of vets if he were out there.
Well, and, can I ask, Mike, can I ask, what did he blow the whistle on? What was...
He made the long waiting lists and the way they were being manipulated brought those to the forefront for the public.
Okay.
Similar to the folks in Arizona.
Yes.
And I don't believe it was quite as bad a popular bluff, but bad enough. And
right.
The man really should have been applauded and instead is being punished.
Now, right.
One thing that really concerned us is a year ago, a stay was put on his case by the, well, and I would have to go through notes to find the exact name of the board, but it was, with the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. Oh, I'm sorry, no. Anyway, a stay was put, not allowing the VA to fire him. And an administrative judge has retired that was on this board, leading it to no longer have a quorum. According to the letter of the law, they actually could fire him because they don't have a quorum to renew it. Though by the spirit of the law, he should not be. And they could actually legally fire him tomorrow. And we are waiting to see if that will happen.
Oh, wow.
We did get some good news yesterday. Two senators, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Senator Johnson is a Republican. Senator McCaskill is a Democrat. They came together, sponsored a bill in the Senate that would change the laws and regulations and make it unlawful for them to fire him simply for not having a quorum. They could not get that passed by the full House in time, or the full Congress, because the House would still need to act. But they sent a copy of their letter to the VA, making sure that they understood the sense of the Senate, the opinion
okay.
of the Senate, which, in my opinion, could lead to some VA officials being fired if they were to go ahead and fire him.
Right.
So I guess we'll see how smart some of them are tomorrow.
Yeah. Don't you get tired when trying to deal with these senators and representatives and all the issues I deal with, which are just seem to be getting bigger by the day. But when you have contact with these people, it's a lot of pandering. It's a lot of obligatory remarks and, oh, yeah, we're going to – and then they don't do anything.
You almost feel like you need to take a shower afterwards and nothing
yes.
gets done.
Yes, yes.
And that is not the way the Founding Fathers intended things to be. The elected officials are there to serve us, not to rule us. But dealing with what we have, I have actually requested that our congressman in my area, and he would be Dr. Klein's congressman, sponsor the House legislation that would have to accompany this. I've not heard back from him yet, but I am hoping that he will do the right thing and do so.
Okay.
By the way, at our rally tomorrow, we have invited Senator Johnson and Senator McCaskill, and I believe they are planning on being there to speak. We have invited Senator Roy Blunt, Senator Johnny Isaacson, Senator John Tester, and Congressman Jason Smith. I don't believe we've heard back from them, but we have had confirmation from Senator Johnson, Senator McCaskill. And some of our state officials also have agreed to be there to show support.
Okay.
Though it being a federal issue, they can't do anything legally, but they can put
right.
pressure.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. Well, and it's important for those people to make their presence known, you know, that
definitely.
They are apprised of the situation. Are you going to be able to have any media there?
I know that we have a Fox News channel crew scheduled to be there for national. The three local television stations have indicated they will be there. And
uh-huh.
the two daily newspapers in the area, reporters have called, said they would be there.
Okay.
And this is a city of 12,000 surrounded by farmland and rural area.
Mm-hmm.
The weekly papers in the area have all been informed. I know some of them have printed articles about it. So hopefully we'll see some of them as well.
This, when you talk about Dr. Klein being put in this room, with no staff, no equipment, no nothing. And basically, it's punishment, it's solitary confinement, like you say. And we're still paying the man. I've heard this same thing, Mike. I heard it about the Arizona VA, the Memphis VA, the whistleblower there, Sean Higgins. They've done this. He's been there 10 years and just refuses to let go. The man's got more endurance than I think I would have. But they have just done all kinds of things. He even talked about one lady that he works with who is deaf-mute, and they were apparently forced to hire her. She is quite communicative. You know, she doesn't have any problems. She communicates quite well, but they put her in a small cubicle with no windows, no air conditioning, no equipment or anything, left her sitting there. They've done the same thing to Sean. His little space is basically a cubbyhole, and there's barely room to walk in it and get back out. But this seems to be standard operating procedure for the VA. So what that tells me, when I keep hearing the same story over and over from many different places, I know that this came down from the top. This was an organized plan. This is how you treat these people, because the average person can't endure this. And they'll leave.
Resign.
Yes, yes. And many, I think, do. And but the other part that bothers me in all this, too, him having blown the whistle on this, even if he keeps his job, and even if he's allowed to begin his practice back up there at the hospital, they're not going to quit dogging him. We've got one down in Louisiana who blew the whistle on the DeBakey Houston, Texas Center, VA, and he had discovered a break in the water line coming into the hospital from the city supply. And it was contaminating the water. Sludge was actually coming up through the pipes. And his biggest concern was that ice in these ice machines that had no filters for surgical bays where they removed or replaced organs, they were using ice from these machines with this sludge, water. And he reported it. And I mean, he went through all the proper channels and everything else and said, you know, we need to get this. He said his sludge was backing up through the toilets and everything. He's left that hospital. He's been gone from there since, I believe, 2014, moved back home to his home state, and they are dogging him there. And I hear this from other whistleblowers, Mike. They never stop. Once you
do
this.
That's atrocious,
yeah.
By the way,
they never
I should
stop.
Mention we have two other whistleblowers coming tomorrow to speak and show support for Dr. Klein.
Okay.
Dr. Brandon Coleman from Phoenix.
Yes.
And Dr. Jermaine Clarno from Chicago.
Yeah, Brandon is the one. We had him on here a while back, and he's the one that told me about the $600,000 rock. And honestly, I can't even tell you.
You know, when you were talking about that rock, I was thinking of an experience I had a couple of months ago in Poplar Bluff when I was there. I went to the elevator looking for a clinic office I had to go to. Normally, and there had always been a black board with white letters, you know, the kind that we've seen forever, inexpensive, and they just put the letters in to show you where to go, the room number, they can change them when needed. That was gone. Each elevator had a very, very large, expensive flat-screen, touchscreen TV. And you had to, if you're looking for, let's say, the foot clinic, hit the F, and it would show you everything that started with F, including the foot clinic. But no instructions written there on how to use it. An employee had to come over and show me, and I saw him showing other people all day, and still doing that constantly. So they replaced something that was paid for and was inexpensive to start with the flat touch screen, probably, what, $500, $600 or more? The government bought it. It might have been twice that. Every elevator on every floor had one of those. There were several $1,000s wasted on something that was simply not needed that day. And, you know, the same day I was outside and I noticed a banner, a large banner announcing some program they had going. I had no idea what the program was. It didn't say on the banner, and I know from being a businessman, that banner would cost me $300 to $400 to have made. And there were several of them around there. So I was thinking there was probably enough wasted money there to cover a year's salary for a nurse or a skilled technician.
Well, that's like Sean out there in Memphis was in the lower levels of that hospital, and he had seen this billing for all of this expensive medical equipment, but he couldn't find the equipment anywhere. He finds it sitting in the basement of this facility, still in the crates, 2 years after it had been purchased. And I was asking, I had Commander Wells on here a week or two ago, why they would do something like this, and he said it has to do with their funding. He said it's that use it or lose it thing. He said they don't benefit from saving money. He said it's not like, oh, you saved money, so, you know, we'll give you some more money. We'll give you the same amount, and if you can save it again, you know, good for you. And then when something big comes along, you've already got the money. That doesn't happen. He said they have to spend every dime of it or they lose it.
Well, my father was a teacher, and he, in his budget, he had the same thing and explained that to me when he was a kid, when I was a kid, and he thought it was crazy and stupid. Mm-hmm. But that was the system he had to deal with. You know, the VA, if they were acting like a business, would not do that. But
no.
The, you know, the one in Poplar Bluff, another example, is the fourth floor where the nursing home section is. I had a friend whose husband was a World War II vet. He was up there for 4 years before he passed away. They had good beds, no problem with them. They were all fine, functional, nice. But they threw them away and replaced them with brand new ones. One day, and at the same time replaced all of the linoleum on the floor that had several more years of wear left on it. It was fine. And I found out it was a use-it-or-lose-it situation. They had to spend that money.
Oh, wow.
And
that's just absolutely ridiculous, because any sense of controlling your costs and your expenses, you know, goes out the window with that. There is nobody has to budget, so to speak. And,
exactly. It's really sad.
It is. I feel bad for this doctor, and I'm hoping that this protest draws enough attention that they'll back off of this. Like I say, I think the unfortunate part, Mike, is that they'll never quit riding him. They'll never quit. I've seen this happen in other facilities, and they will. What bothers me is garner the support of other employees to attack and to. That always, to me, is somehow in my head. I can't get my head around that. But they will, and they'll do it. They'll do it. I don't know if they get scared. I don't know what it is. And the administration in these hospitals is so lacking in competence in most cases that I have to wonder how these people even got these jobs. I just don't know when you see the level of incompetence. And how poorly everything is managed. How did these people get, and beyond that, how do they keep them?
In the private sector, they would not keep their jobs because they're not productive.
Right.
It's, you know, unfortunately, government has always worked differently. We do have a president now who said he's going to change it. I'm hoping that happens.
Yeah.
Let me mention one other thing that I found kind of interesting. We had a bit of a crisis today. We had originally asked the VA for permission to gather on their grounds. But again, you know, we've made it very clear we intend to follow all rules, all laws, not interfere with people entering the facility. And we're not anti-VA. We are for improving the VA.
Yes.
They denied permission to step foot on their property. And there was a church next door with a parking lot that came right up to the VA property. And then the city has given permission to get on city sidewalks, as long as, again, we're not blocking entrance. They have been very cooperative, the city police. But the church called today and took away the permission they had given us to gather.
Oh, man.
And fortunately, the shopping center parking lot across the street at the last minute did give us permission to gather. So it's an even better location. But,
well, what was, excuse me for asking, but what was the church's divine excuse for that?
Well, that's interesting. One of the elders in the church called, the fellow I'd spoken with initially. He said some of the members of the congregation were afraid of getting involved in anything controversial.
Oh.
And later in the day, the wife of one of our veterans who has driven 600 miles to get there called the church. She was upset, wanted to know what the reasons were. And the person she spoke with said that the police had come by and said that they were going to wind up with a large group of angry, rioting veterans.
Oh.
But the city police tell me that they did not do that. And, when I say this, granted, I cannot prove it, but I have wondered if someone from the VA police department, and it
yes.
is a police department wearing uniforms, driving police
yes.
cars, I wonder if they perhaps stopped by
mm-hmm.
to kind of sour the grapes a bit.
Yeah.
And, because... the police I spoke with understood we were not angry veterans. We were there to show support for the whistleblowers and for improving things. So,
right.
I don't know if we'll ever find out for sure, but I'm certainly going
to
ask.
I think you're probably very close to the truth there. And that's another thing, too, that seems to be on the rise, Mike, is the use of these facility police forces, which to me just strikes me odd that a veterans hospital would have a police force. I just can't figure out why that would be necessary. Why would that be necessary?
I don't understand the need, honestly, and that, again,
exactly.
it increases expenses.
Yes.
But every government agency these days seems to have its own SWAT team.
Yes. From the BLM to the USDA and FDA, they've all got their own little military force. And
I guess the FDA has one to protect Monsanto. You were...
Yeah. yeah.
Earlier.
That's about it, too, isn't it? To protect Monsanto. Yes. I don't know what we're going to do about that. How many are you anticipating tomorrow? Do you have any idea at all?
People have asked me that all day, and if I pulled out a number, I would just be guessing.
Okay.
All I can say is I've been getting calls from, from Springfield, Missouri, which is a 5-6 hour drive away from here.
Mm-hmm.
Little Rock, Arkansas, which is at least 4 hours away. One man came from Indiana. I know of a pretty large group, really, from Springfield coming.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot of folks who are willing to drive a very long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads me to believe that we will have large numbers there. And if the numbers are not quite as large as I think, we're going to have pretty high-quality people.
Right.
They are committed. So,
well... And I think it's always quality versus quantity. I think the caliber of people that shows up is far more important than the number. And have you noticed that the number of protests? And I'm not talking about this Antifa crap, but protests against so many things it is becoming more commonplace. And people are upset. And when you get to the issue of veterans, when we've got the HUD secretary, Ben Carson, is going to take $30 million away from vouchers for homeless veterans. And I had one person say to me about that, they just spend that money on drugs or alcohol. They don't get that money. It goes directly to the person who owns the property. And that isn't money that goes in the veteran's pocket. It is to provide shelter. And a lot of times it's very, very modest shelter. I think it's the least we can do for these people. And to bring them home from these man-made hells we call war and to treat them in the manner that they've been treated and then to do to people like this Dr. Klein what's being done to him, this whole system needs to be redone. It needs to be reworked. They need to get people in there. Somebody said, because of what they pay, they can't get the best. And excuse me, with the money they have available, they should be having nothing but the best. And that's just the way I see it.
Dr. Klein has been sitting the last year and a half trying his paycheck without being able to help. And he has admitted he makes more than $200,000 a year.
Yeah, that's pretty good money.
And I think he'd rather be earning it than sitting there in an empty room.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way,
can you imagine how long those days are? Yeah.
There's some special equipment that they purchased for him right before they put him in solitary confinement It cost around $250,000 that hasn't been used in a year and a half. So, same kind of thing as the equipment in the basement you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
When it's not their money, they can waste it.
Well, and then, like at that Memphis VA, too, they just changed administrators again and got a better one in, supposedly, who spent $800,000 right off the top redoing all the administrative offices in a decor that they liked.
That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, I know they spend an awful lot of money on art at some VA facilities.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There are an awful lot of schools out here that would happily donate student-generated art from grade school through college. And that would be appreciated a lot more, and that would not spend money that could go to, you know, medicine or salaries of specialists or who knows what.
Or maybe start some therapeutic art classes for the veterans and put their artwork up.
Exactly.
I think it would be far more relevant and of interest to see what these people would produce. I've always thought that art, you know, was a great escape for many things. And so I just, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on. We got a couple minutes left here. Is there anything you want to wind this up with? Anything I might have missed over we didn't touch?
Well, I just say anyone that is within a reasonable drive and can make it, we'd love to have you tomorrow. Poplar Bluff is in southeast Missouri, very close to the borders of Illinois, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas. So you know, just check the map. And if anyone would like to give me a call, I'm at 417-264-2435.
You want to give that again, Mike?
417-264-2435.
Okay, and that's tomorrow. And what time does it start?
Starts at noon. We'll be gathering about 11 o'clock.
At 11 o'clock, okay. All right.
And
that's
should be easy to see. It'll be the old people with the placards and posters.
Okay. Part of that silver tsunami they talk about.
And, yeah, in the 60s it was the young hippies, and today it's the 55 and
yeah.
up.
Yeah. It just... we're still the only ones out there fighting, the way I see it. And,
That's it.
You know, because I don't see anything happening in the middle and nothing coming up. That really kind of bothers me, too. It seems to me the overall apathy in various sectors is just almost too much to bear sometimes. And this attitude of, well, what are you going to do? Well, if you just sit there, you're not going to do much of nothing. And... you know,
Who was it that said all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing?
Exactly. And that's very true. That's very true. Okay. Well, thank you for coming on this evening. And let us know how this turns out. And if there's anything we can do to help you get the word out on this, you know, after it's over, if you need some publicity, we can help with that.
Appreciate
so
it.
So just, you know, let us know, Mike. Okay.
You take care. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope everybody that's in the area can make it over there. This goes on what he's talking about, this isolation of this doctor at this facility for blowing the whistle, and this time it was on another one of these wait lists. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And something's got to change in this VA system. I think the whole thing needs to be collapsed and just reworked, and these deadbeats that are in there gotten out of it. We're going to move on here and talk to our guest for the second hour here. And we've had her on before, and it's imperative that she was on this evening because she won her case after only 20 years. Jeez, who'd have thought it would have happened that fast? But she wrote a book, and it's called Stall, Deny, and Hope They Die. And this is about the process at the VA administration, how they run you on what is called the hamster wheel, and they just move you from place to place and fill out these papers and do it again, and oh, we didn't get them, and we lost them, and you have to do it over again, and this can go on for years and years, and it does. And our second guest here this evening is Denise Calden. Denise, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, Marty. It's so good to hear your voice. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you back. I was so glad to get your email the other day that you won. I cannot imagine after all this time and all you've
well, my
been
feet
through.
Have not,
yeah.
My feet have not touched the ground.
I can't imagine. You probably, I bet you came close to passing out, didn't you? I know I did. I just got an email, you know. But Denise, for those who might not be familiar with your story, could you give us a little background on it, what happened, how you got to where you are?
Yes. Well, as you know, every veteran and their family have a story that Congress and America needs to hear. And I have been fighting the VA claim system for now 20 years. I actually revised a quote from Lily Tomlin years ago, and I said to myself, now I say, I used to pray for somebody to stand up, speak out, and voice the concerns of so many veterans and their families. And then I realized, Marty, we are somebody. And before I begin telling you a little bit of history, I want to reintroduce myself. According to the VA, I don't have a name. I am VA file number XC28918810.
Oh.
Yes. They do
I didn't
not even
know
have
you
my
should
name.
Have told me.
Yes. But after years of encouragement from family and friends, I finally made the decision in 2015 to share our family story. And in my hope in sharing my family story, Marty, I'm hoping that my voice will help the nation remember the forgotten, because we are so rarely heard. And the laws will need to be corrected in the broken VA claim system. To give you a bit of history, my husband of 16 years, his name was Jim. He is the father of our three children. He served with the Navy Seabees Mobile Construction Battalion in Vietnam in 1968. We married in May of 1980. And we had the all-American dream marriage and wedding. He was a staunch Catholic from Massachusetts. He had a dream of having 10 children, as most Catholics do, and building our home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He even designed our home, Marty. It was beautiful. He called it Camelot. And he even had the song, The Impossible Dream, sung at our wedding. But as it turned out, because of his military service in Vietnam, our dream as a family, indeed, was impossible. In January of 1987, after years of him doubling over in pain just from eating a simple apple, and we were building our dream home in Chapel Hill and raising our three young children, we came to learn that he had stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I was told, without any notice whatsoever, that he had 2 years to live. So everything came to a close. Our children were 2, 4, and 6 years old at the time. He did live for 9 years, but it was horrific. Over the course of the 9 years, as a result of his years of experimental chemotherapies, episodes of post-traumatic stress disorder, which wasn't known very well back then, but now I could write a book about the symptoms. The children and I actually lost my husband of 16 years and their father emotionally, mentally, and physically. In the early 90s, Jim and I even hired a child psychologist. Her name was Dr. Carolyn Schroeder, and she was going to help our children cope with their father's terminal illness. Sadly, our home had become increasingly volatile, unpredictable, and at times very, very dangerous environment. After several incidents, Marty, one described in my detail, in my book in detail, Dr. Schroeder called me one night, and she told me, she said, Denise, whatever you're doing, drop whatever you're doing, get the children out of the house and run. I had no idea why, I grabbed the children out of their beds and we took off. I later learned from Dr. Schroeder that Jim, and it wasn't him, he was a wonderful man, it was his chemotherapy and his post-traumatic stress disorder. He had just stated to her in a meeting that he was not going to die by himself.
Oh.
He was not going to leave us behind. So she basically went to court and said that she strongly advised us to remove, that I had to remove myself and the children from our home environment immediately for their safety and mine. We lost our home that we had built for 10 years, and our children, my three children and I relocated to Georgia in 1993, and we ended up losing our dream home that we built for 10 years to foreclosure. In July of 1996, I received a phone call from Jim's sister, who said that following his bone marrow transplant, he had less than 24 hours to live. And I had to, you know, of course, go to the school, pick up my children and tell them it was a day that I would like to forget. My husband died on July 17 of 1996. In that year later on, his terminal illness was certified by the VA service-related due to exposure to herbicide. Of course, everyone knows it's Agent Orange.
Right.
After the children and I attended his funeral in Massachusetts with his family, I was working full time, by the way, at a college in the president's office. I went to the Veterans Services office and filed for my VA DIC spousal benefits. It was on that day, Marty, in 1996, that I was told by the VA representative that another person with whom my husband of 16 years was living with during our separation had already filed for my benefits.
Oh,
and
wow.
To this day, as I'm speaking, she has received my benefits for 20 years. I was told by someone that she's on husband number 5 or number 6. She has no children. And I've been living in pawn shops, raising our three children since 1996 and working full time. So you can imagine, I immediately called the VA office in Portland where this woman lived. And they said to me, "We have too many cases like yours, Ms. Cowden. You will have to get a private attorney." And thus began my 20-year battle. As you can imagine, I was just trying desperately to keep food on the table and the lights on. Several VA officers have stated to me over the years that she should have been charged with a federal crime and even served prison time. I did finally get a copy of her application, and it was full of discrepancies and false dates. The interesting thing about it is years later, I did go to the Freedom of Information Act, Marty, and I asked them for a copy of my file because I said, something is wrong. Why is the VA not correcting this? Why are they being scammed by this woman? And I found a letter in that file, and it said that it was dated only 60 days after my husband's death, and the letter stated that they knew that we were still married. So that's what I found that on my own. I was not told by the VA they had it. It was just in the records. And it was a letter to her stating, according to our documents, he is still married. And we were. We were never divorced. So
wow.
Thus began my journey with the VA. There's an interesting story behind the title of my book that you mentioned earlier, and I'd love to explain that one. After 12 years of denials to my benefits, in April 2008, I flew to Washington, D.C. to attend a hearing at the Board of Veterans Appeals after so many denials, and there was no explanation. It was just basically ignoring all the facts that I had sent to them, the medical assessments And prior to the hearing, a VA representative reviewed my file, and he said, as we're walking down the hall, "Denise, the VA regional office in Atlanta really dropped the ball in your claim." He said, "With my experience, it is my strong guess the VA will never admit it, because approving your claim would open up a vast number of other claims on file just like yours." And as we continued walking, I was in shock. And then he looked at me and he said, "You do know what the VA's unwritten policy is, don't you?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Oh, it's very common knowledge. The VA's unwritten policy is stall, deny, and hope they die." And that's the reason I have the title to my book. It came directly from a VA in Washington, D.C. representative. So I'm going to read you the sentence in that letter that I found. It said, "The document you sent with your claim," this is to the person that scammed the VA.
Okay.
This is from the VA, and it says, "The document you sent with your claim shows that the veteran and Elizabeth Denise were legally separated, but does not show a final date of divorce. So they knew it from 60 days after she scammed them, and yet they've still paid her for 20 years. I had looked back. You got to remember, I was not even looking at legal paperwork during that time. I was trying to put food on the table. I have never signed any divorce papers. I did sign separation papers, but I didn't even read it. I was trying to get our children out to safety. And legal paperwork was the last thing on my mind. So 3 years after my husband's death, I finally contacted the county courthouse in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where we lived. And I asked them if they had divorce papers on file, because this woman keeps saying we were divorced. And they found some divorce papers that she had filed 72 days before my husband died, and he was on his deathbed. So that, again, shows you how fraudulent she was.
She filed them?
Yes, that is what I've been told, because he was on his deathbed. So we found out later that the attorney that filed them for her lost his license and is now in Mexico somewhere. And not to be discrepancy about Mexico, I'm just saying he left the country.
Right.
So, but in 2005, and now keep in mind, I don't even have money to do this. I'm still paying bills from all of this. In 2005, I obtained an attorney in Chapel Hill. Her name is Lisa Wagner, and I flew to North Carolina in 2007 along with my oldest son. And she had a court hearing for us because she was going to try to get that fraudulent divorce paper thrown out. Again, I had never signed it. I didn't even know about it. And in December, it took quite a few years. In December 2008, I was back in Macon waiting for the ruling, and I received a call from this attorney, Lisa Wagner. And she said, "Denise, are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "The North Carolina Court of Appeals just ruled that that fake divorce decree is indeed null and void." I was so ecstatic. That was 2008. I was so ecstatic. I said, "Oh, my God, thank goodness, finally, the VA is going to listen."
Yep.
That was very, very wrong. That paperwork did not even budge them. I did not even hear about this description, the hamster wheel, until a few months ago, and I'll go into that. But that's what I was on. I was on the hamster wheel. After years of more insurmountable paperwork, working full time and doing this paperwork after hours, and denial after denial, I obtained an attorney firm in Bethesda, Maryland, and their name is Bergman & Moore, and I highly recommend them. I think God just sent me their way, because they have been a godsend. And they were hired on a contingency basis because I certainly had no funds for a retainer. In September of 2010, Bergman & Moore called to tell me that I had received what they call a joint motion for remand, which basically means that the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims had vacated all the denials previously. And again, I was so excited. But in the ruling, it said, "Finally," and I'm quoting from the paper, "finally, the board must provide expedited treatment of this case under law 38 U.S.C. 7112. I thought, "Oh, my God, the VA is going to right this horrific wrong to my family." As it turns out, that was in 2010, and this is 2017, and I am still waiting. My VA file was simply returned to the Board of Veterans Appeals in 2010, where it sat on someone's desk for another 7 years, and they filed an appeal because they did not want to admit the mistake. They didn't want to admit that they had been scammed.
Oh, wow.
Sadly, Marty, I realize because of the VA, for thousands of families, I'm just one story of thousands more.
Right.
These loved ones gave the ultimate sacrifice and continue to sacrifice each day with delayed medical care for post-traumatic stress disorder and their injuries. But the wars that they so bravely fought are not over because of the VA.
Denise, have you ever heard anything from this woman at all?
No, I have not. I've certainly thought about reaching out to her. I thought about sending her a copy of my book. What's interesting on that note is that over the years, I actually filed I'm sure you've heard of the VA hotline for fraud. And
yes.
I have reported her several times and never got a response. So I didn't give up, but I thought, you know, I've got to focus on the other. So, and my attorneys basically said, Denise, that's your end. We've got to just work on this other end, you know. But I have to give you some positive news. And I'll describe to you in a minute what happened in Washington, D.C. recently, but I have gotten an email. In fact, I'm reading it right now, dated March 28th, just a few months ago. And it's from the VAOIG, which is the Office of Inspector General hotline. And it says that they want to open up an investigation. And this is a result of a veteran named Robert Fearing, who is also an author and a very brave and dedicated veteran. He heard about my story, and he picked up the phone and called them and said, you have got to investigate this crime. And it was only his diligence that finally got the VAOIG to ask for my authorization. I have been told, Marty, not to give them the authorization yet because my attorney does not want any more paperwork to slow this process any further down.
Right.
He said, after all the paperwork's done, then you can open up the investigation.
Right.
So
I agree. And it might be the reason it was offered right now, too. You know, is to impede what is in place now.
Right.
You
That's
know,
a good point.
Denise, I read your book, and this has been such a the mismanagement here, the deception, the defrauding of you and your children, and by someone who is obviously known to the VA to be a scam artist. You can't have a file like this and not know it. You can't have papers that say, you know, they were still married. You can't be married to him. None of this. Every time I hear this stuff, it's like these stories get worse and worse. And the mismanagement of this administration, the VA administration, all the way down through the hospitals, it is so corrupt. It is so unreasonable and illogical, the money that is wasted, the time that's wasted, the lives that are affected by doing the wrong thing and many times intentionally doing the wrong thing. And I can't figure out why. What is the purpose?
Well, I have been told over the years by many VA that they don't want the public relations on this, that they said that it would look bad for them that they had been scammed. And it also would look bad because they have so many other cases like this, it would open up too many more. And as you know, after I signed a petition in 2016 for the Navy Blue Water Awareness, which was co-sponsored basically by Commander John B. Wells, or is being advocated by him, who was your guest.
Yes.
I got in communication with Commander Wells, and he is a powerful voice for getting veterans heard in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular, as you know, the Blue Water Navy legislation is for veterans to be covered for their lifetime illnesses and deaths resulting from the exposures to chemical dioxins and Agent Orange and so many more. It's too many to list. Facts that are ignored by our Congress and our nation for decades. I do encourage listeners to go onto the Facebook site and look for Blue Water Navy Awareness. But anyway, Commander Wells was so gracious, and he extended an invitation to me to fly to Washington, D.C. just a few months ago in February. First off, I didn't have the money. I just finally went out and got a loan. And I said, if I have to walk, I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 2 days that I was in D.C., Marty, Commander Wells and I met with members of Congress and their staff in 16 meetings, during which Commander Wells used my 20-year claim as an example of what he calls the VA's appeals hamster wheel. That was the first time I had ever heard that expression. Commander Wells has an incredible article in a Washington, D.C. newspaper called The Hill, and it's entitled, "To Solve the VA Appeals Problem, Get Rid of the Hamster." And I encourage everyone to go read it. It's fascinating. And this is before he even knew about my case. So I'm just
right.
an example of thousands more. And some of the some of the quotes that Commander Wells said, he said that the appeals backlog has led to the archaic and inadequate appeals system collapsing under its own weight, and that appeals that should take months drag on now for years. Of course, mine has been going on for now 20, the appeals since 2010. And he said that 76% of the cases appealed from the board to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims involved a remand and return because their rulings were so wrong.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Mine. And he said that the Board of Veterans Appeals has suffered from a lack of leadership. And do you know it has not had a chairperson since 2010?
Why?
It's all been acting chairs. Yeah, and so nobody is really in charge over there and looking at oversight on these appeals such as mine. And he said even the decision makers at the Board of Veterans Appeals, they're not even certified administrative law judges. And they're never held accountable for the fact that 76% of their rulings are returned. Nobody's saying you should at least have a 10%, not a 76%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what the crazy thing about it is the Board of Veterans Appeals does not even allow electronic filing. And it's very well known that they do that because they think it will expedite the appeal system. They want people to continue to be on that slow hamster wheel.
Well, Denise, don't you think that one of the reasons for that is if you're not the veteran himself that they're hoping will expire, is that as a family mm-hmm. member, like in your case, you'll simply get frustrated and go away. You'll just give up.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, yeah. And then they can call it closed. Yeah.
Well, in fact, it's money in their bank. In fact, they're earning interest on this money that they're not having to pay to women. And believe me, I have suffered. Not only did I lose our home that we built for 10 years in Chapel Hill, on another quick note, because this is a whistleblower story, I am an official whistleblower in Georgia regarding the higher education here. And because I stood up, I lost my job in higher education in a president's office. After 15 years for speaking out, 9 days later, I lost my job and lost my second home to foreclosure. But I feel very strongly, Marty, I may have a debt, but I am richer than these people will ever be because I can look myself in the mirror. I know that I stood up for what was right. I would like to bring up a topic. When the gentleman that spoke earlier, and I was highly regard to their mission tomorrow, he mentioned Chairman Johnny Isaacson. You may be aware, Johnny Eisen is the chair of the Senate U.S. VA Committee. He's also he's from my state. I have been corresponding with Johnny Isaacson for over almost a decade.
Uh-huh.
And I have to tell you, one of the things he says, in other words, he says one thing in the media and does another thing in private. He
yep.
does not want, he does mm-hmm. not want, and I'm the first to tell you here, I almost had to be dragged out of his office in February in D.C. by Commander Wells because I was so furious, as you can imagine, because his right-hand person up there, Adam Reese, was sitting at the table, and I've communicated with Adam for years, and he basically dismissed everything I was saying about the fact that he will not even take my calls now because they don't want the PR because he's the chair of the VA committee and also from
mm-hmm.
Georgia. He doesn't want my case going public. So I finally, I got an email in January. This is an example. In January, over a year ago, not 2016, I finally got a response from Isaacson's staff member in Atlanta named Drew Ross. And his email said to me, he said, "Oh, Ms. Calden, I apologize for any inconvenience and thank you for your patience. This is a big request because I was asking for help, and our office is still in the process of evaluating your inquiry. Again, thank you for your understanding, and we will be in touch." That was a year and a half ago, and I never heard back from him.
Now, why am I not surprised, Denise? I just, you know,
right.
I, this stuff, and these people sit on these committees, and I think what is more insulting than anything is this treatment of this pandering, this blowing you off, this acting like, you know, you flew in there with some wild story and you're just taking up their time. And what do you expect them to do? Well, I expect you to do what we paid you to do, represent the public. And you're not. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because I know our time is limited, but I do want to share the positive news of this whole thing, is that during our last meeting with Commander Wells, with members of Congress, in February, my cell phone rang. I had forgotten to turn it off. And all of a sudden, I realized it was my attorney in Bethesda, Maryland, Brian Anderson with Bergman & Moore. And he said in the message, he said, "Denise, I've just received the ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals. It's good news. Call me." Bottom line is I got a second joint motion for remand, a 9-page from a senior judge, and as of last Monday, Marty, the VA has not appealed it. So we are on the roll.
Well. Just how long, if to make this right, how long do they have?
Well, that's what I keep asking them. And, of course, it's always 60 more days. And I started laughing. I said, I've heard 60 more days for 20 years. And so I'm going to be very persistent. I'm going to call them once a day and say, okay, where are we now? I'm even trying to get a meeting with the director of the Atlanta Regional Office. His name is Al. I can't even pronounce his last name. But he's with the reason I'm – he's the one – his office is the one that dropped the ball initially. And I want a meeting. I want a face-to-face to show him the family that he has thrown to the side. And I want to remind him, I just flew back from the West Coast. My youngest son is a Navy nuclear engineer officer getting ready to be deployed again. And we're still serving, and they don't know my name.
They don't know your name. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
This stuff just makes me sick. Okay, so let's say that the VA makes good with you. What will happen to this other woman and all the money they paid her?
Well, they'll probably just have to write it off because she'll probably file bankruptcy. And in other words, she will probably say, well, you paid me, so I don't have to pay it back. But I have, you know, gotten some information, and they certainly should try to put a lien on her home. They should do something. And I'm certainly going to follow up with the Office of Inspector General as soon as the resolution is done. And the first thing I'm going to do, what I'm trying to do now is I want to educate Washington, D.C., and let them know. In other words, once that comes in, I'm going to continue. My ultimate goal is to see that the laws are corrected so that another family does not have to experience the horrific injustice that my family has suffered for decades.
You know, my problem with more laws is this. Every time we recently had one come out in the guardianship issue, Grassley, Klobuchar, Blumenthal, and I don't know who all was in this thing, and it was on the Elder Exploitation and Abuse Prevention Act or some such nonsense, and everybody in that community was, you know, sending me emails going, Marty, you have to get out and support this bill. We need your support on this bill. Well, I don't support anything that I don't read and backtrack through code and title to find out what it really does say. And this bill was 26 pages worth of nonsense. It was about, you know, wire fraud and internet scams. And we got the Trade Commission pulled in on it. And I'm reading this thing. I thought, didn't anybody read this? And so I talked about it on air, and I just basically said it was a load of crap, and it was. We've got laws in every state against these very things, and we have federal laws against these things. We didn't need another piece of legislation. What this did do, and this is what you have to watch for in this stuff, is they will insert something in there that's going to change everything, but in places you never expected. Now, what happened in that bill was, on pages about 5 and 6, it got into saying that they were going to lend support and to places like law enforcement, adult protective services, the guardianship association. It goes right down the line of all of the predators in this system, and they're going to lend their support to them and further empower them, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. But they specifically mentioned, and there's a reason. There's a reason. And the reason is what they will do then is fall back on that bill on an unrelated matter and say, well, the bill says it's Elder Exploitation and Protection Act. So all these people in here, now we're going to hold them totally unaccountable. We named them specifically, and I can already tell you how this is going to play out. But like I say, when it comes to more laws, you have to really go through these things with a fine-tooth comb. Some people love me for the research I do on laws, and a lot of people just hate my guts for it. I don't care. But you really have to backtrack it through that code and title to find out, and never take the first draft that they submit as the end-all, be-all, because once that's tabled, it can be changed 1,000 times without you ever knowing it, and what gets passed bears no resemblance to what you thought it was going to say. And people will be jumping, oh, we got our bill passed. Wait a minute. They're going to hang us all tomorrow at sunrise. You know what I'm saying? There's these, it's something else entirely. So I'm always afraid when I hear about new legislation, that and the fact that they add what they call bills that won't stand alone. In other words, if you tried to pass something, a particular thing on its own, people would scream bloody murder. No, you're not passing this. But if you hide it in another bill and you attach it to something really important like defense authorization, and they'll add things in there like a new tax on bicycles or you know what I'm saying? They'll add all this crazy stuff in there. The recent 21st century, they call it Cures Act. I call it the Scam Act, a big pharmaceutical insurance company giveaway. And you got about 3/4 of the way through that bill. And here it said in there that the Energy Department was ordered to sell all oil and gas reserves held by the U.S. Now, why would that be in that? Why would that be in that bill? And what are they setting us up for? You know,
they flip it in.
Yes, I'm always worried about new legislation. Then you have to be careful about who you get to sponsor that bill. And if they tell you, oh, we've got people that write bills for us, run away. Write your own bill. Okay. You can do it. You do not want one of their professional bill writers. Basically translated, that means member of the Bar Association that's going to twist everything all around and make sure you don't get what you want, but we're going to put a whole bunch of junk in there that's just going to kill you. So you want to stay away from them. Just present your bill, write your bill, and like I say, it's a really pretty easy process. And the other thing that has to be included, Denise, it used to be up till about 15 years ago, whatever the bill's title was, it says, you know, under the authority of the Constitution, and what in the Constitution gave them the right to pass this law. And then the second thing that it would say before you got to the body of the text was what the intent was. Okay, like in this case, the intent is to end the hamster wheel and stop this mess going on at the VA.
Wow.
And nothing else is to be implied or interpreted.
You need to put it in layman's terms.
Yes.
And not all this legal jargon that they can misinterpret and misrepresent. I am also corresponding. You know, the new chair of the House VA committee is Representative Phil Rowe, and I am requesting. You know, my years and years of requests to speak before Johnny Isaacson's committee, I never got a response. And he doesn't want me there because it will make him look bad. But, so I am now trying to get before Representative Phil Rowe. And some of the questions that I would like to ask members of the VA committees is, number one is, why are the VA DIC SASA benefits applications approved without the requirement of critical legal documents for verification? For example, the Social Security Administration, you have to give your blood almost, and your firstborn. I mean, they have to know who you are, but not the VA. And I also want to know, why does the VA allow VA claims representatives to handle the lives and benefits of veterans and their families without adequate education and training of the VA laws?
Right.
I had to educate the my claims representative in the Atlanta VA regional office, I had to educate him on the laws that I knew more than he did. And by the way, I did send Isaacson an autographed copy of my book. Of course, I never got
it. Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, I referenced him several times, yes.
Well, he'd be interested in knowing that. You know, no publicity is bad publicity. It's all good. And even if you're a jerk, but yeah, and isn't it? I just hate these people for the everything is about protecting their position and their public image. And like you say, in front of the camera,
right.
It's one thing. Behind the scenes, they're a snake in the grass. And it just they're all like that. I think that's why they hate the internet, Denise.
Right.
Granted, there's a bunch of junk on the internet, no doubt. But they hate it more than anything because they can't hide anymore.
It used to be
if you saw something on TV on the, you know, the evening news and a congressman or somebody saying, making some statement, you had no choice but to take it as fact most time. And then you would find out 20 years later it was bullshit stuff, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, but now they can't do that. They tell a lie and 30 seconds later it's on the net. He lied, you know, and... You know, do you understand what I'm saying? So there's this
I have a prime example of that. As I mentioned to you, I'm a Georgia whistleblower over regarding the university system of Georgia, the higher education in Georgia. And the other day, the Attorney General, Chris Carr, publicized, I'm going to have open forums on transparency. He did not tell the public that he sealed my documents. He sealed my documents in my case, my whistleblower case, because of all the facts. And I called him down on it on Facebook. Of course, he didn't respond, but I'm going, I'm so glad you're going to be transparent. Then when are you going to open up my documents?
And he sealed them on what basis? Why did he seal them?
There is no basis. It's because I've got proof of what they did. And mm-hmm. the Georgia system is so corrupt. Well, you do know the higher education in Georgia is called the Southern Mafia and the Untouchables.
No, I didn't.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
no.
So that's my second mission, but that's for another day, another time. But the last question I want to ask the members of the VA committees is this. Keep in mind that both of my appeals stated on the last sentence, and this is a quote again, the board shall proceed expeditiously in accordance with 38 U.S.C. 712. And then in parentheses it said expedited treatment of remanded claims. They had to explain it to the people. My question to the VA committee, Marty, is this. Who enforces compliance to this ruling? Nobody, in other words, they say one thing, but nobody's enforcing it.
Okay, here again, I see this over and over again. And what happens here is this, and like in all this legislation that has been passed on the guardianship issue, you know, and people say, well, we got this bill and it's not going to do anything. And let me tell you why, because nowhere in this, and this is intentional. Okay. You can't pay attention to what you're reading. You have to look for what was intentionally omitted that should have been there, but isn't. So you can sit and cite crimes or give orders all day long. But if you don't specify what that crime is, who does the enforcement? And what process will be used to enforce, you basically issued a roll of toilet paper because this, it has no teeth. You can't do anything with it. Yeah, it's a crime, but they didn't tell us how it was supposed to be handled or who was supposed to do the handling. So we can't do anything because they didn't tell us. And they do this I've seen this so many times. Where they do exactly this thing. It's what's omitted. Everybody gets all excited about this basic text and what it says, because on its face it sounds good, but the enforcement mechanism, who's supposed to do the enforcement, that's not there. That's not there, and it's not there intentionally, because it renders that bill totally useless.
Well, this certainly has been totally useless. And my question is also, if these appeals go all the way to the U.S. Court of Appeals, which is the top court for veterans claims, why does it have to be thrown back from interpretation from the board again? In other words, it is the hamster wheel. It should be final right there. And basically right now that 9-page, very strong document that I received on February 9th, and like I said, I received it just in a phone call. Do you know that someone even told me, Marty, the reason I got it is because someone heard I was in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, wow.
It wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me. In other words,
wow.
all of a sudden they pulled my file and did a ruling because they knew I was in with members of Congress. It's interesting. It was on the last day I was there after 7 years. Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm...
I a friend of mine who lives in D.C. said to me here recently, you will never meet a more dishonest, corrupt, evil bunch of people as you will the people that walk the halls of our government. And I said, that's kind of harsh. Yeah, but it's true. And
that's very sad.
I thought, that's a sad statement about everything. And people ask so many times, what happened? So-and-so ran for office and they were going to do this and that and something else. So let's take Trump as an example.
Right.
What all he was going to do if he got elected. And he started out with a bang and he fizzled real quick. Death Vader, Dick Cheney, we call him Death Vader, showed up, it's been about a month ago now, in D.C. Death Vader leaves D.C. and Donald Trump spun on absolutely everything he had said he was going to do. Did a complete 360. He got his butt handed to him. His biggest problem is he thought he was actually going to go in there and be the boss, and he found out he ain't running nothing. And if he persists in trying to run it, they'll take him to Dallas. Now, that's just the way it is. But these people, I think they have high ideals, many of them, when they go in. But once they get there, I think they're overwhelmed with the cronyism, with the corruption, with the easy money. You take this money and we're going to do this, and it's really not going to hurt anybody. And even if it does, it's not going to hurt us. And, I think that just overtakes them. And I think there is a fear factor there also. I think there are currents running in D.C. that if we actually knew what they were, you talk about the Southern Mafia. Well, we got one running in D.C. too. It's no different.
Right.
And,
we do need to start. We need to start with term limits. I mean, that's common sense. I have always said that common sense, there's a sign on the door of the Gold Dome in Georgia at the General Assembly, and there's one at the Capitol in D.C. It says, leave your common sense before you enter, because there is none. And we've got to start somewhere. Term limits have to be, I mean, that's common sense.
Yeah, nobody should be allowed to nest up in government and then to leave it and go to work for people working against us or, the whole system is sick.
It is.
I don't know how, economically, I don't know how we can continue to support it or how long it can be supported. Let me put it that way, maybe, because they're going to keep taxing us to death. But I just don't know how long it can keep operating the way it is. Because the corruption is so widespread and it's so, nothing is about the law. I mean, that's the worst part of it.
Right.
Nothing is about the law. It's about what they can get out of it,
Well, in fact, that's exactly, sometime I'd like to show you, I mean, what I have found in higher education. I personally was the source of a report that showed $7 million under the table just to seven presidents. I mean, they basically get this money allocated to them for education, and they put it in their bank account. And I have walked the halls of the Capitol in Georgia at the General Assembly. I've walked the halls for years. So I am fighting the state government and the federal government. But I'm one of those people that I'm saying I have sacrificed my entire life, with my husband's death, and he did not die, and my son does not serve for this kind of government in the state or the federal, and I'll be darned if I'm going to sit back and watch it. I'm just not going to do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is, and that's the thing, too. We send these people off to fight and to do all this stuff, and then when they come home, we treat them like dirt. This is, I think, one of the biggest betrayals was Iraq, Afghanistan, particularly Iraq, and our military went over there. They're fighting for our freedom. They're fighting. No, they weren't. They were fighting for the oil cartels, central banking.
Yes.
And a lot of them came home realizing that that's what they had been sent there for. It wasn't anything to do with our freedoms. As I've said many times, terrorists can't take our freedoms from us. The only people who can do that is the government, and they're doing it pretty steady. And that it just, you know, I don't know, Denise. I don't know where this is all going to end. I don't know how it's all going to end. What I do know is people are just damn fed up. They're just tired. And one of the things I see happening constantly, and of course I watch the net constantly, is the efforts, and I think it's by paid trolls and astroturfers. Well, many of them you know are. They get out there and try to derail the conversation. They're the people that will show up on a website or a, you know, a news feed, and they will start calling other posters names and making all sorts of stupid remarks. And that's to divert you away from the context of the article. So you don't think about there, you go after this person who's doing that.
Right.
You know, we see these people actually paid to do this. Actually paid to do this. And that to me just always, there is every effort made to divert us, to keep us off on some tangent that amounts to nothing while all this dirty work is done. And I have a real problem with all of this going on. But overall, what I'm seeing is this level of disgust and distrust and just I've had enough. It's getting larger every day, and that worries me because I don't know how it will end.
Well, in fact, I have had so many people say to me, Marty, over the years, Denise, what is the point? Why are you even fighting in Atlanta regarding the higher education? Why are you really think you can get something done? And then they say, why are you going to Washington about the VA? And I said, because somebody has to. I mean, I can't not sit back. I mean, I cannot just sit back and watch what they've done, because I have seen it firsthand what they've done to my family. I've been in the pawn shop trying to feed my children for 3 years, you know, my three children for 20 years. And they have ended up to be incredible adults, but I have the debt to prove it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, as you know, I've mentioned to you before, I had the unexpected pleasure of corresponding with actor Reese Witherspoon. She saw my speech in Mount Eagle, Tennessee on YouTube. And she, her initial email to me, Marty, keeps me going. And she said to me, I am so excited that you have written a book to tell the world your story. And then she said, people need to hear it and connect a face and a family to this injustice. And then she said, like my grandmother always said, if you want something done, ask a Southern woman to do it. And that keeps me going. My children and grandchildren and all veterans and their families, I'm doing this, speaking out for them, because our elected officials, Johnny Isaacson in particular, is not speaking for veterans and their families. I know firsthand.
But he gets extra money for chairing that committee. Yes, he does.
Yes. Well, in fact, he just had a campaign last year, and I was watching him on TV. He had a woman there talking about how she had gotten her benefits because of him. I almost wanted to break the TV. In other words, he's doing the propaganda very well, and people believe him. People believe him. But yet I hand-delivered him a document over 8 years ago at a public forum, and I begged him. I said, will you please read this document? This is while I'm raising three children and working full-time. And he looked at me, and he says, I'll read it on my flight back to D.C., and I never heard from him. His right-hand people, and I will name them, Adam Reese and Drew Ross, they won't even take my calls anymore. But I assure you, I'm not going away. I will be flying back to D.C. I will continue, even if this restitution continues and I get what I have to speak for other veterans until they wake up. Isaacson needs to be taken away as chairman of the VA Senate Committee, period.
Well, the thing is, Denise, they just put somebody in equally as inattentive.
Oh,
let's put it that way. You know, nobody gets in those positions who isn't on board with the program and hasn't promised to cooperate. They don't get those positions otherwise. You know, that's just the way that goes.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that a veteran or a veteran's spouse or a child of a veteran is not appointed to that committee as a spokesperson. You know, I can't even get up there to testify for 3 minutes because they don't want me. They don't want to. They don't want anybody to hear what I have to say.
Right. So. Too many Christmas. What a rigged system.
It is. It is. But I have to tell you, Commander Wells, I highly regard him. He is waking up some people up there, and if anybody can do it, he can. So.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I just want him. Yeah, it's very sad. But I'm going to stay positive only because I just feel like we're on a mission here, Marty, and we're speaking for thousands of veterans. And all America, in fact, they need to wake up and start voicing. They're, like tomorrow in Missouri, I'm very glad that they're doing that. But the service and sacrifices that veterans and their families have contributed for generations, it's the very foundation that continues our country's freedom. And we all know that it is not free. We have lost a lot.
Yeah.
But I will continue. I am still on speaking engagements, and I will continue. I've got quite a few podcasts behind me, but I will keep speaking. Johnny Isaacson is not going to get rid of me yet, and neither is the higher education system in Georgia. I happen to see, you know, I'm sitting here while a student's crying at my desk because tuition had gone up, and I'm over here filing the paperwork on the president's $400,000 bonus. So I know what's out there. I've seen it.
Wow. A $400,000 bonus, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Good he got Lord. Rehired, and they paid him $1.5 million, and he wasn't even fit to serve office. That's why they sealed the documents. He wasn't even fit to serve, and they paid him $1.5 over 4 years out of tax dollars. Yeah, that's my next book.
So, okay. We'll be looking for that one, Denise.
Yeah.
Holy crap. What is he, somebody's drunk brother or uncle or something? What is he?
No, he, unfortunately, it's a system we have in Georgia. It's called the Good Old Boy Southern Mafia. And they're in the General Assembly, I'll give you an example. The Attorney General that sealed my documents initially, named Sam Owens, guess where he is now? He is the president of one of the colleges. He's the president of one of the colleges. They rewarded him for covering up for them for so many years. He is now, his salary is $430,000 as a president, and he's never been in higher education before. But that's the way.
What exactly does the president of a college do? I'm just curious. What do they do?
Basically, they sign the paperwork that everybody else does for them. I was an assistant to a president for 15 years. I ran that office, believe me. And for the last 3 years I was in that president's office, I was told to cover up his, I'll just put it this way, his health issues, and I'll put it discreetly. And that's what they've sealed. 8 days after 15 years, I submitted a document saying I will no longer falsify his leave reports because he was never there. They wanted me to falsify his leave reports. And 8 days later, I was terminated. And I was told later it's because I knew too much and I had objected to falsifying his leave reports. And this is how it works. He's a multimillionaire, and I'm just getting over foreclosure on my second home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it works in Georgia. And I intend to go up to Washington also and talk to the Department of Education because they're not listening here. Our General Assembly is not listening in Georgia because they're all in bed together.
Yeah. I lived down there south of Atlanta for many years and got a good taste. Yes. yes. My sons are down there. And but I got a good taste of Georgia backwoods.
Well, then you're familiar with Kennesaw State, right? Kennesaw State
mm-hmm,
University.
Yes, I am.
Well, that's where the former attorney general is now their president.
I'll be darned. Imagine that. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
They even had an injunction against him from the faculty because they didn't want him up there. And, of course, the court is so corrupt, they dismissed it. So,
oh, my God.
Anyway, I could write a book on that. I really could. It's crazy. Well,
you need to. Yeah. You need to. Well, listen, we're down to the last few minutes here, Denise. I want to thank you for coming on again. I want to get you, you know, if it's at all possible, hooked up out there for the summit. And if you can attend that, that would be great. And you can go to the book signing. And so I'll get to work on that again. And but keep us posted if you get excuse me, if you get your restitution, just give out a big yippee, okay?
I will.
You know,
I will certainly
let
do
us
that.
Know.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah.
Well thank you
we
for having me.
Oh, you bet. We had one other veteran on here. Oh, gosh, it was maybe 6-7 months ago, Martin Patterson. And this was another one of those bizarre VA stories. He had been wounded overseas, I believe Afghanistan, and or Iraq, one of the Ganzeraks. Anyway, he comes home. He's walking across the field at one of the bases, the air bases. He gets struck by lightning. Hits him dead in the middle of the chest. Should have killed him, and it didn't. And, of course, he had some, you know, ongoing problems from that that passed over time. His now, get this, Denise. His parents put him under a guardianship, said he was incompetent. And they took all of his VA benefits, took his Social Security. They took everything, and then the judge ordered him to work on his father's farm for free every day. He just got out of this. We did the show with him, raised a big stink. Mike Volpe wrote several articles about it, and he just got out from under this guardianship after 11 years, but it was fighting with the VA that, again, here they wouldn't intercede on his behalf. They wouldn't do anything and actually helped to put this guardianship in place. And I will never understand what goes on in those people's minds that they do this. I just don't get it. I don't get it, Denise. But anyway, we will be back next week, of course, and I believe next week is third week, so it should be Lawrence Lucas. We'll be updating on the USDA and the new secretary, and I know everybody's got big hopes for Sonny Perdue, but I don't. And he just cut $29 billion from rural farming, family and independent farms, because he says that the corporations can do it much better and more efficiently, meaning Monsanto. And
Sonny Perdue is one of the most corrupt. And listen, I have an email from him saying that all these millions is okay for them to pocket in the higher education. Yeah.
Oh.
That when he was governor,
I'd be interested in that, Denise.
I'd be happy to send it to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Because I can put that to good use. But anyway, we'll be back. Let's see. I think Sunday evening, Lisa Belanger, appellate attorney from Boston, will be on. She's going to be talking about the ongoing case with her father. They've now siphoned out of a $9 million estate. They got him down to less than a mil. They're still holding him hostage in his home. Nobody can see him. Nobody can talk to him. But the bones ain't picked dry yet. Anyway, we'll be back Sunday night. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. And just everybody stay calm. Stay calm. Good night, Denise.
Good night. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.